My name is Judith Katzberg. I'm the media task chair of the section, and it is my honor and privilege to welcome all of you here today for the 2015 Maternal and Child Health Section Martha May Elliott Luncheon. I am really glad to see all of you back again. We have stellar awardees this year. My role has been chair of the awards and chair of the planning the luncheon, but I didn't pick the food, so I hope it's okay. All right, so we are very lucky this year to have Ann Dozier as our chair of our maternal and child health section, and it is my privilege to welcome her to the podium.
So I'd like to add my thanks to you for coming to our luncheon today. It's been a pleasure to be leading the section this past year, and you're stuck with me for another year. Thanks very much. And I appreciate your support of our section. We certainly have had a far reach of leadership, both within our section and within this organization, and we're pleased to honor some of those individuals today. We are here to honor the legacy of one of the early champions and leaders of maternal child health. We'll hear a little bit more about her legacy later. We're also recognizing our current and future champions. And as part of this annual celebration of Dr. Elliott, we do hold a Martha May Elliott Forum, which this year is entitled The Collective Impact from Grassroots to Treetops, Building Local, State, and National Programs to Reduce Disparities in Breastfeeding. That session is held immediately following this session at 2:30, and it's actually just in the room next door. I would also like to thank Judith Katzberg, our awards chair, who has organized this program. Please give Judith a rousing applause for this. And I'd also like to recognize people who have received the Martha May Elliott Award in the past. So if any of you in the audience have been past recipients of the Martha May Elliott Award, if you would please take a moment, put your forks down and stand, we'd appreciate to recognize you. There are several of you, yay! I'd also like to take a moment to have people stand who have been prior section award recipients, including our young professionals, distinguished service, effective practice, etc. So if any of our past section award recipients have been here, please stand. So there's several of you out here. Yay. So thank you all. We will be having the program while you're eating, so just keep chewing. We're going to take a little skip in the program as our leader of our Student Fellows program is still getting here on the bus from her hotel, so we'll be shifting around a little bit. But we're going to now move on to the Student Authors program, which I have the opportunity to present on behalf of our Cynthia Castle, who is our Student Fellows committee chair, so she and her committee review all of the abstracts. And when they review the student abstracts, they select 15. 10 are in a poster session, and 5 are selected to, and I just realized I'm not moving the little scroll too long. That's what I look like. Okay. So Cynthia and her team pick 15 abstracts, and the top 5 go on to present at a session just preceding the luncheon. It's the Greg Alexander student authors session honoring Dr. Alexander and his long-term commitment to academic pursuits. So of our 5 student authors who are here in the audience today, okay?
I just wanted to ask everyone who wins an award to please stay after, because we won't have the photographer for the whole time we're here, and we want to get everybody professionally done photographed.
Pictures, right.
Okay.
So as your name is read, please step up to get your certificate. So we have 3 honorable mentions. The first is Anthony Kondraki, who presented on timing of smoking during pregnancy and the risk of preterm birth. Anthony, if you would come up. Our next recipient, as an honorable mention, is Nicole Michelson, maternal subjective social status, psychological distress, and parent-child relationship. Nicole, if you would come up. Is Nicole here? And our third honorable mention is Tiara Wiley, parenting behaviors among adolescent and young couples, the critical role of polyvictimization. Is Tiara here? Yes, there she is. And now for the drum roll. So second place went to, or is going to, Tawanda Street, prenatal care, smoking, and low birth weight. Is Tawanda in the audience? Yes? Come on up. And Tawanda, thanks to our support from ADMAP, the second and first place recipients also receive a check. Second place is a check for $100. And the final drum roll is for Dustin Curry, in honor of his paper entitled Evaluation of Immunization Status of Contemporary Nurse-Family Partnership Clients. Join me in congratulating Dustin. Dustin is here. Hello, Dustin. Hey, there he is. Come on up. Very exciting to hear this. It's very exciting to be able to honor all of our student awardees here. And again, please stay after the session so we can get more formal pictures. Okay, so I'm doing the next one too, right? I'm doing this one. Okay. So the next award. So the next award we are going to present is the section's Distinguished Leadership Award, and I'm honored to present my colleague, Dr. Deborah Jackson, with this section award. After completing her bachelor's degree in nursing from Florida State, Deborah went on to receive an MPH in maternal child health from San Diego State, and ultimately a Doctor of Science in Epidemiology and Biostatistics from Boston University. As one of her nominators noted, Dr. Telfer said, Deborah has repeatedly proven herself as a capable leader at the local, academic section, and association levels. Deborah currently serves as a senior health specialist in the UNICEF health section. She is an accomplished academic as a senior researcher and recently professor extraordinary at the University of the Western Cape, where she focused on MCH challenges for women and infants, serving as a senior instructor, and importantly as a mentor for young women from diverse backgrounds in Africa, the U.S., and other countries. Since 1984, Dr. Jackson has served in multiple capacities in the MCH section and APHA, exemplifying the reach and influence of our section across the organization. For the section, she served in numerous elected and appointed positions. She was co-chair of the Innovations in Maternity Care and the International MCH Committees. She was the section website editor. Later, she served as secretary-elect and secretary, including as chair of our student task force. She was also the section program chair and most recently as chair-elect, section chair, and as past chair, leading the section awards committee. She also served several terms as a governing counselor, representing the voice of MCH in the larger association. For APHA, she served as both a member and then chair of the APHA Nominations Committee and as a member of the APHA Awards Committee. Most recently, she served on the APHA Intersectional Council and was elected to its steering committee. APHA and MCH and our section has benefited measurably from Dr. Jackson's commitment, passion, and leadership. Please join me as we recognize Deborah's multiple contributions to the Maternal Child Health Section's receipt of our Distinguished Leadership Award.
Hello to all my colleagues. First, I'd like to thank Anne and Joseph for nominating me, Judith and her committee for bestowing the award I would like to congratulate all my fellow awardees, in particular Kay, who was a great mentor and friend to me when I was secretary and she was chair. I'm dedicated to MCH section because of the dedication you, my colleagues, show to women and children around the world. Your work in MCH is my inspiration. And I want to give you two examples. These aren't my stories. These are your stories. I actually had nothing to do with either of these projects. The young man pictured on the left, on your left, I think, on the screen, he was born with both mental disabilities and severe physical abnormalities. He was abandoned as an infant and spent most of his early years in either hospitals or other institutions. Eventually, he was adopted and mainstreamed. He is pictured here receiving an award from his local mental health association. A week later, he graduated high school and is now enrolled in a technical school. The young woman next to him is his lovely girlfriend. Throughout his life, our MCH system worked for this young man, and he is a proud success story of the work that we do. MCH professionals also work globally. The group picture on the right shows the young children and their mothers in rural Malawi. The gentleman in blue on the far right in the blue coat is a community health worker. And these children are all alive because he was trained through MCH programs to treat them with common illnesses such as pneumonia and diarrhea with simple evidence-based community care. So I share this award with all of you, my fellow MCH professionals, because of your dedication to our field. I have been proud and humbled to serve the MCH section and all of you. On a final note, I would like to thank my MCH posse, you know who you are, for your light in the time of darkness. Thank you.
It is now my privilege to invite Marjorie Sable up to the podium. And I have to say that this year was very thrilling because we had a tie for our Young Professional Award. So we have two Young Professional Awardees, and that is great news for our section because we have so many young professionals that we can honor. We know that our profession is going to thrive.
I'm so pleased to be able to present this award, the Young Professional Award, to Nancy Cheek Zamora. Nancy is, I nominated Nancy. She is an assistant professor in the Department of Health Sciences in the School of Health Professions at the University of Missouri in Columbia. And I should say she was one of the founding members of this department in 2009 when she came there. It has grown to a department of 21 faculty and 1,800 student undergraduate majors. She teaches health promotion and practice and principles of public health. Nancy received her background's in psychology. She has a bachelor's in psychology and a master's in health psychology from University of Texas at San Marcos and a PhD in public health from St. Louis University. Her current research focuses on improving healthcare transition planning and health-related independence for youth with autism. She was the first person to identify disparities in access to healthcare transition services for youth with autism spectrum disorder, and she found that youth with ASD receive healthcare transition services only half as often as youth with other special healthcare needs. She was also the first to use national data from the National Survey of Children with Special Healthcare Needs to show the importance of family-centered care and care coordination components of the medical home in reducing unmet needs for children with autism spectrum disorder. She has numerous publications, peer-reviewed publications and journal articles and book chapters in high-impact journals, including the Maternal and Child Health Journal and Pediatrics. Her work has also been recognized through numerous grants. She's the PI currently on a $500,000 grant from the Department of Defense Autism Idea Development Award, and is co-investigator on another $500,000 grant from Autism Speaks, on Autism Speaks from the Autism Treatment Network. Nancy is also an advocate on the national level. She was a member of the Department of Health and Human Services Interagency Autism Coordinating Committee and was one of five experts invited to develop transition guidelines for a five-year IACC strategic plan, where she worked to forward a research agenda that includes accountability for and service to children with special health care needs. Steve Connie, who is the director of the Thompson Center for Autism and Neurodevelopmental Disabilities, said this: "Through this work, it is clear that Dr. Cheek-Zamora recognizes the importance of taking her research funding and applying it to public health practice and policy." Nancy has received numerous awards. She received the LGBTQ Research Center Catalyst Award and was a finalist for the MU Inclusive Excellence Award. She helped to, and she'll tell you a little bit about this, but she helped create a module that's been implemented in all Introduction to Health Professions classes to help the undergraduate students address issues of LGBTQ. She's also a mentor to her students. She won the 2012 Mentoring Award in the School of Health Professions, the Dean's Award for her excellence for a research poster award, and a university-wide award for innovation, teaching, and use of technology. Nancy is a 10-year member of our section. She regularly presents at APHA. In 2013, she assisted the Children with Special Health Care Needs Committee co-chairs, Jennifer Marshall and Cynthia Castle, in organizing a special session on healthcare transition services. And I'm very pleased to announce that she was recently elected as an MCH section counselor. So Nancy is a teacher, a mentor, a researcher, and an advocate. Her work has been recognized nationally, and she is most deserving of this 2015 Young Professional Award. Congratulations, Nancy.
For my work in MCH community, as well as for Margie Fable, who nominated me. If you've seen the movie Hope Floats with Julia Roberts, you have a picture of my hometown. It's in Smithville, Texas. It's very small. My father worked on the railroad all of his life, and my mother worked for the only clinic, the healthcare clinic, in our county. I am an only child that just happens to have seven much, much older sisters. Thank you. I'm an only child, but I have seven much, much older sisters. As a child, I was surrounded by this tribe of females, and I watched them transition into working women and mothers, and watching my mom and my sister sort of struggle with having it all taught me that it's possible to have a family and to be a working professional, but it's not an easy road. Not surprisingly, my parents went through the empty nest syndrome while I was still in high school. They really stressed independence for me, and I was able to make mistakes when the stakes were still really low. I think that might have been because they just valued my intellect and they trusted me, but they might have just been tired of raising children. The importance of early independence has really stuck with me and something that I continue in my work now. As early as first or second in second grade, I struggled with school. My mother reports that she came to school at least once a week to convince me not to quit and be an elementary school dropout. I remember very precisely understanding really complex concepts, but struggling and knowing that I was working harder than everyone else. And this all made sense when, in my master's program, I was diagnosed with dyslexia. Since then, I actually received a bachelor's in psychology and a master's in health psychology from Texas State University. After graduating, I conducted decision-making and behavior change research in clinical settings. But I early on realized I really loved population-based research. And so I went to get my PhD in public health with an emphasis in policy at the University of Missouri. Oh, St. Louis University. Thank you. I'm St. Louis University. Yeah, thank you. PhD life was actually a joy. I took all of these skills I had learned from being dyslexic as a child and put them to good work. So I had persistence. I was diligent. I knew how to learn from multiple modalities. And I really was an obsessive note taker. So those worked for me. So now that you know a little bit about my past, where have I gone since then? I joined the faculty of University of Missouri in 2009. To a newly formed Bachelor of Health Science program, as Margie said. I was one of three faculty with 500 students. So to say it was challenging would probably be an understatement, but we now have 21 faculty, almost 2,000 students. I've helped develop emphasis in public health, a health literacy certificate, and an LGBTQ health education program, which I'm really, really proud of. I began my research in healthcare access and quality for people with disabilities. I published several studies using National Survey of Children with Special Healthcare Needs and the Medical Expenditure Panel Survey. These were some of my first studies using secondary data analysis, and I've gone on to use that in multiple ways. But in this case, I really learned that children with developmental disabilities were getting lower access and worse quality of health than all other children with special health care needs. And this was particularly true for children and adolescents with autism. So this led me to really concentrate on that particular group of people. I've started working in healthcare transition for adolescents with autism. I use both qualitative and quantitative methods to do this. I've been unbelievably helped by Dr. Michelle Tatey, who's my colleague, and we use Photo Voice now, which is giving cameras to children and young adults with autism to let them express themselves and what they're going through. We've learned so much from this process. We learned that about their desires to be independent, but their lack of access and ability to actually do independent skills. Giving the adolescents a chance to take pictures and talk about them was unbelievably beneficial and has led to the inclusion of adolescents as a participant and a key informant in all of my current work. I believe that using Photo Voice was so successful that it should be a way that we communicate with all, we provide care to all, and we perform research with this very vulnerable population. I utilize all of my work, my previous work now, to develop this concept that I call health-related independence, which characterizes what caregivers and youth with autism are concerned about as they transition into adulthood. We concentrate on skills like self-help skills, knowledge about diagnosis, safety, and sexuality. Health-related independence is a way in which youth with autism can take care and ownership of their own physical health, their mental health, and their sexuality. Last year, I received a $500,000 grant from the Department of Defense to explore this concept of health-related independence, both using qualitative and quantitative data. Within the next year, I'll use the survey that we're now developing, health-related independence, to test its reliability and validity, and then we're going to actually bring it to 5 clinics across the country, so we're really excited about that next phase. Dr. Tatey and I are also working on implementing Photo Voice methodology in clinical settings as a tool to increase provider and youth communication for people with all types of disabilities. And finally, I am really excited to continue my work in large data sets, analyzing quality and access to care for all people with disabilities. I'm particularly excited about a new Census Bureau Research Center at the University of Missouri that I'll be exploring. I want to wrap up by saying I couldn't have done any of this without my amazing friend Donna Halloran, who not only is a pediatrician and a researcher, but is my personal editor. I also should end with saying, you know, that I could do none of this without my support of my loving husband, Raul, and my children, Gabriel and Zamora and Joaquin. But as we all know, they're a lot of work. So I might have been a little more productive without them. I'm not sure. But a lot less happy. Not as happy. That's definite. But thank you so much for this award and have a wonderful day.
Wonderful. Okay, we have to go backwards now. Tian Parker Dominguez has arrived, and Tian is our secretary-elect, and she has the role this year and next year of being the chair of our student fellows. So I'm going to move the slides. Excuse me. And I just want to say while she's walking up here that it's so prestigious to be selected as a student fellow, and we feel so lucky that we have all of our student fellows with us helping our section and becoming our future leaders. And we have a number of our student fellows who have gone on to get the Young Leadership Award and taken major leadership roles in our section. So. Can all of our former student fellows who are in the room please stand? Now, Tian.
I've been asked to ask you to please hold your applause until after I have called all of the students up. And what I'd like you to do after you come up and get your certificate, if you can just all sort of line up in front of the screen here so that we can see you all together. Okay. I just wanted to make mention that it was a very competitive field this year for the student fellow positions. It was very hard to make decisions. It came down to decimal points in the averages of the reviewer ratings. So the students that you see before you today are really the cream of the crop. They really very much deserve this fellowship opportunity, and I've had the pleasure to sort of been communicating with them via email, and we were able to finally sit down all together face-to-face yesterday, and just really impressive group of students, and we should all be proud and excited about the next generation of FCH leaders. So, first up is Anna Maurer Thatcher. Diana Kasser Uhl. She's right behind.
I know, I'm gonna hand it.
Christian Clausen. Jacqueline Dow. Carmen Green, Kiana Hardy, Lizzie Harvey. Thank you. Kila Hags. Lorenzo Hopper. Ruth Scoop. Olivia Lindley. Amy Henderson Riley. Ruby Yada. Nicole Sabtra. And then a special note of recognition to our senior fellow this year, Christina Ratliff.
Thank you so much. Actually worked out pretty well. Doesn't have to come up twice, and she will introduce our second first place tie winner for the Young Professional Award.
Okay. Very pleased to be asked to both nominate this person and then be asked to introduce her. I enthusiastically nominated Janine Hill for the Maternal and Child Health Section's Young Professional Award for her significant and indefatigable contributions to the field of maternal and child health through service, advocacy, administration, and scholarship. I met Janine about 8 years ago, I think, when she first joined the Improving Pregnancy Outcomes Committee. She was a new doctoral student, a fellow. With great enthusiasm, she quickly stepped into a co-chair role, and she later was elected to be a section counselor. Janine has brought a wealth of practical experience, knowledge, and passion to the committee and to the section as a whole. She has successfully managed organizations, programs, community-based projects, and various advocacy efforts with tangible and impressive results, such as major policy gains, substantial increases in program funding and staffing. She has served in key positions on several boards, councils, coalitions, all aimed at promoting the health and the well-being of the maternal and child health population at the local, the state, and the national level. Besides all of this, Janine also juggles motherhood and the demands of her own public health consulting firm and the rigors of doctoral education. She has garnered several scholarships, fellowships, and awards for her many achievements, including this year's AmChip Young Professional Award. Janine is an incredibly upbeat, sincere, passionate, and humble person who is well-deserving of this recognition for the myriad contributions she has made and most undoubtedly will make to the field. So congratulations to Janine.
Thank you. So for those of you here receiving this award in my hometown in Chicago know me. I'm good at many things, but one of the things I am not good at is getting recognition and awards, so thank you. It's really great to get this award won because, as I told Tian, I think this is the last year I will be eligible for the Young Professional Award. Getting up there. But more importantly, because it's here. And so many of my friends and family and board, Dr. Ellen Mason, the chairperson of our board at EverThrive Illinois, and Mary Driscoll are here to celebrate with me. And my mom is here. So thank you, Mom, for being here. So I'd like to give a special thanks to Tian, who you just met, for being the main nominator and cheerleader for me. So I've been so privileged and blessed to work with her and Judith and Key as part of the co-chair crew for the Improving Pregnancy Outcomes Committee for the past 8 years. The MCH section has been such a professional important professional anchor for me since I was a student fellow many years ago. I'd also like to say congratulations to Nancy. I'm definitely in very good company here. I'm well aware that this award is not only celebrating my accomplishments to date, but is the visual representation of a promissory note for my potential and work in the maternal and child health field in the future, and I hope to fulfill my promise in accepting this award today. I should also warn you that I've worked for about 23 years now and have about another 25 to 30 years to go. So I'm ripe for a mid-year inflection point, a mid-career inflection point, and reinvention, which I think you'll hear in my remarks today. I have been so privileged to serve as the executive director of EverThrive Illinois for 5 years. And in that time, we, like many of you, have been wrestling with two concepts in particular, innovation and diversity. With both of those big, hairy issues, external and internal forces have converged to force us to make a stand about who we are and what we value. And like many of you, we have struggled with them at a time of great organizational change. In my 5-year tenure, we have lived through a rebranding campaign. We have doubled and almost tripled revenues. We have expanded programming and services, and we have increased the staff by a third. Peter Drucker, a business management guru, termed innovation as change that creates a new dimension of performance. To wrestle with these ideas as a field means that we will have to have the courage to have very hard conversations and put policies on paper in hopes that they become cultural norms to create something better than the sum of its parts. When we look back over the history of the maternal and child health field, I see great innovation. The milk stations, vaccinations, text for baby. But to be honest, I haven't seen the next big game-changing idea in some time. And that worries me as a professional who's more comfortable with change than most and as an advocate for the field of maternal and child health programs, policies, and systems. We are going to have to figure out new ways to be sustainable and fund ourselves. Many of us, our agency included, are beholden in large part to external funders under a project or deliverable relationship, which is not super flexible to trying and failing sometimes at new ideas. I told my leadership Friday at our staff retreat, I'm fine with mistakes and learning from them. I am not fine, however, with mediocrity. Once we figure out the funding thing, however, then what? How do we get the next milk station idea? This is where diversity makes a difference between so-so changes and real innovation. One of the accomplishments I am most proud of at EverThrive is the concerted effort the board and staff have put into finding diverse talent in their peers and trying to rearrange historical tables to have more direct interaction with each other and have even the quietest voices be heard. We are living through an aging of the maternal and child health workforce, and unless we are intentional about mentoring younger career professionals and convincing them to see the value of our work and mission, our field will not survive. For those of you who had the pleasure of being at the MCH section town hall meeting yesterday, you heard the young Chicago authors. and you realize the impact our societal incivility is having on their outlook. One of the most important roles of the maternal and child health field is to make sure all children's lives matter. One of those students will be the one with the next big idea. And I think our MCH section student fellows are an important component of a solution to this national problem. I found my way to maternal and child health through one of my last classes at Boston University, taught by Milt Kotelchuk, who's here, and Lois McCloskey. So I saw Lois in New Orleans as I was running to the airport last year, and I said thank you for showing me what I was supposed to do here, and so I'm telling Milt that as well. And I know my purpose is to help women, children, and families in the broadest sense of that phrase. The other thing I've learned, particularly in the last 2 years, is that I am included in that group and that I have to take care of myself first. And I share that wish with all of you, that you are taking care of yourself at least as well as you are doing for your clients and stakeholders. Innovation and diversity mostly come from a fair amount of individual and group introspection, along with periods of break from the work. In closing, I am so thankful and proud of the work that you all do, and I thank you for giving me this award.
Congratulations to all of our award winners so far. This is wonderful. Okay, it's my privilege now to welcome to the podium Lindsay Handelsman for Text for Baby. Oh, great. Hello, everyone, and thank you for inviting Text for Baby to be a part of this wonderful event once again today. We are so happy and honored to be here today, along with so many exceptional maternal and child health professionals and visionaries in the field. My name is Lindsay Handelsman, and I am a senior outreach specialist for the Text for Baby program at 0-3, which is the new nonprofit home of Text for Baby. For those of you who are not familiar with Text for Baby, it is the nation's largest and only free mobile health service promoting maternal and child health for pregnant women and mothers with infants under age one through text messaging and a mobile app. A woman can sign up for the text messaging service at any point during her pregnancy until her baby's first birthday by texting baby or bebe for the Spanish version to 511-411 from her cell phone. We also have another great platform to share additional health and safety tips for mom and baby. Our mobile Text for Baby app complements the texting service, providing additional information to parents and caregivers during pregnancy and through the first year. In addition to our national free Text for Baby text messaging service, we also offer a state custom version of the Text for Baby service available to states who may wish to contract with us to develop messages that include state-specific maternal and child health resources and ad hoc messages on health alerts or topic of interest such as safe sleep or other topics. If you'd like to learn more about any of the offerings that we have, more than happy to speak with you after the event or another time at APHA. As I mentioned, and you might have already heard, on May 4th, Text for Baby's operations was moved to a new nonprofit called 0-3 in partnership with our partner, Voxiva. 0-3 is a leading national nonprofit organization that takes a multidisciplinary approach to supporting the healthy development of infants and toddlers. You can learn more on the website, 0-3.org. We've been able to make great strides with Text for Baby during our past 5.5 years as an initiative of the National Healthy Mothers, Healthy Babies Coalition. And now we're thrilled to be a part of 0-3 as we continue to grow and enhance the program. Through innovation and unprecedented public-private partnerships, Text for Baby has reached over 930,000 pregnant women and new moms since 2010, providing customized information and tips they need to keep themselves and their babies healthy.
Why I'm here today is to give some awards to some exceptional states that have really made a difference with Text for Baby and reaching many moms throughout their community. In May through October of this year, all 50 states, the District of Columbia, and U.S. territories participated in our 5th annual Text for Baby State Enrollment Contest. The contest is a competition between states to encourage new mothers to subscribe to Text for Baby. Again, this year, there were 3 categories of states and territories competing against members of their group, a large, medium, and small state category, which were based on their estimated number of new pregnancies and new infants. We are pleased to now announce and congratulate the winners of the contest and their incredible efforts reaching moms. I'd like to invite the representatives from each of the winning states to just stand up at the table for time's sake. I know we have a tight schedule. As we announce their state name and give the awards. So for the large state category, we have Virginia. Oh, there she is. Virginia has been a strong advocate of the Text for Baby program since Text for Baby launched in 2010. Their strong coalition of Text for Baby partners from various state agencies have been working together to promote the service, including through Virginia Department of Health's Infant Mortality Strategic Plan, the Collaborative Innovation Network COIN Initiative, Virginia Premier's efforts to provide free phones and connect members to the service, and the Department of Health state customization of the Text for Baby service. These efforts helped the state enroll over 2,200 women in the service during the contest period. Thank you to Jennifer O'Brien and her other colleague, Leslie, for being here representing Virginia Department of Health and the rest of our Virginia Text for Baby partners. And moving on to the medium state group, and our winning state is Oklahoma. There they are. This Oklahoma currently has the highest rate of enrollment of Text for Baby in the entire country. This is their second year in a row winning the contest for the medium state category. The Oklahoma Healthcare Authority, the state's Medicaid agency, has continued to lead Text for Baby efforts in the state, integrating Text for Baby into existing outreach efforts across the state and creating a channel for automatic enrollment of Sooner Care members into Text for Baby. Additionally, over 65 state partner organizations, including the Healthcare Authority, Oklahoma State Health Department, George Kaiser Family Foundation, and many others, have reached moms through a variety of media and advertising outlets, prenatal and pediatric appointments, birthing hospitals, WIC clinics, faith-based organizations, community events, and so much more. These efforts help connect to over 4,960 women during the contest. Congratulations to Oklahoma on winning, like I said, their second year in a row. We have Darren Kirkpatrick, Shelley Patterson, and Melody Bays, who are here on behalf of the Oklahoma Healthcare Authority and representing Oklahoma Text for Baby. Congratulations. And lastly, we have our winners of the small state category, and it goes to South Dakota. Woo! Throughout the competition, South Dakota consistently held one of the top spots of Text for Baby enrollment among the small states. Led by the South Dakota Department of Health, moms are primarily enrolled through targeted promotional strategies by State WIC and Bright Star home visiting programs. Additionally, Text for Baby resources are provided by the State Health Department for public health nurses, staff eager to make contact and share more information with local providers across the state, as well as through community events, online communications. As a result of South Dakota's efforts, 300 people signed up for the service during the contest. Join me in congratulating South Dakota. We have Dr. Specker and Wade Bai from the South Dakota State University representing our South Dakota Text for Baby partners in their group. So to conclude, Virginia, Oklahoma, and South Dakota, our 3 state winners, brought on a combined 7,474 new expectant and new mothers to Text for Baby, and over 58,600 moms were enrolled across the country into the service. Congratulations to all of our winners. Let's give them all another round of applause. We are so thankful for all of our partners who helped promote the service, and thank you for all your support for this innovative service.
Okay, so now we're going on to the part of the program that everybody actually came for. And before I introduce our current APHA president, who's going to introduce our award winner, I want to talk a little bit more about Martha May Elliott. And I'm pulling my comments from an article written or published in the American Journal of Public Health in 2004, put together by folk from the National Institutes of Health and the History of Medicine Division, Mannion Perry. and Sarah Tedeschke. So pediatrician Martha May Elliott was associated with the Children's Bureau for over 20 years. When criticizing her role and the influence of the Children's Bureau, and even when noting Elliott's remarkable achievements, commentators frequently questioned her authority as an unmarried expert on child health. Clearly, we hadn't gotten to evidence-based healthcare at that point. Despite the rather hostile environment in which she worked, Elliott went on to receive many well-deserved honors, including the American Pediatric Society's highest award, the John Holland Medal in 1967. Dr. Elliott was invited to become the first chief resident in a newly established department of pediatrics at Yale Medical School, established by Dr. Edward A. Park. She worked at the New Haven Hospital and several years later was named as director of the Children's Bureau in the Division of Children and Maternal Health in D.C., but was encouraged to commute between Yale and D.C. to maintain responsibility in both of those, complete her duties in both of those areas. Chris, I think probably only a woman might be asked to do both of those things. I'll just keep my mouth shut. So she and Park initiated a three-year study in the prevention of rickets, presenting their preliminary results to the American Medical Association in 1925, and as a result, they recommended cod liver oil and sunlight as effective measures to prevent this deforming disease of childhood. And as a consequence, the once prevalent rickets became much less common in America. When she was appointed to the assistant chief of the Children's Bureau in 1934, she then moved to Washington full-time, and a year later left her position as an associate professor in the school. During World War II, she traveled to England to study the impact of wartime evacuation on young children. She published a report entitled The Civil Defense Measures for the Protection of Children in 1942, and was also a leading figure in war work at home, running the emergency maternity and infant care program that provided medical assistance to the families of 1.5 million American soldiers. She received the Lasker Award for this work later in 1948. After World War II, she served on the U.S. delegation to the first ever World Health Assembly and was the only woman to sign the founding document of the World Health Organization. In 1949, she moved to Geneva to serve as an assistant director general of the WHO. As one of few women ever to hold such high office in a public health agency, she faced intense scrutiny of her professional qualifications as well as of her personal circumstances. A newspaper headline announcing the appointment described her as a spinster in steel specs, advisor on maternity. 2 years later, she returned to the Children's Bureau as a chief, leaving it in 1956. Subsequently, she became chair of the Department of Child and Maternal Health at the Harvard School of Public Health, and after retiring in 1960, she continued work for the WHO and UNICEF. She was elected president of the American Public Health Association in 1947 as the first woman to hold that position. And in 1964, this organization established the Martha May Elliott Award to recognize her outstanding achievements in the field of maternal and child health care. She died in 1978. So that gives you a context for this award that we'll be giving out today and makes me feel totally unaccomplished in my life, I must say. So now I'd like to introduce somebody who probably needs no introduction, and I'm not even certain I'm going to totally name myself. Apologies. So Shariki, is our current APHA president. So Dr. Kumanikya is an emeritus professor of epidemiology at the University of Pennsylvania in the Perelman School of Medicine. During her 15-year tenure there on the Penn Medicine faculty, she also served as an associate dean for health promotion and disease prevention, was the founding director of the multi-school MPH program, and had a secondary appointment in the Department of Pediatrics Nutrition section. She founded and currently still chairs the African American Collaborative Obesity Research Network, better known to many probably as ACORN, a national network that seeks to improve the quantity and quality and effective translation of research on weight issues in African American communities. Join me in welcoming our current APHA.
Good afternoon, and I'm very impressed with this program and with all the awardees, and I was delighted to find out that one of the privileges of being APHA president was being able to associate myself with this award, and in some way, because since I've been a member of APHA for nearly 40 years, and it's one of the most prominent awards and respected awards I think that APHA gives, so I'm very pleased to be able to present this award this year. So the award is going to Kay Johnson, who probably needs no introduction to this group, but I'm going to tell you a little bit about Kay. Yes, there she is. Just so you'll know how outstanding she is and how she came to win out over a very competitive field of candidates for this award. She's a research assistant professor at the Geisel School of Medicine at Dartmouth and president of the Johnson Consulting Group, which provides consulting services that advance policies related to maternal and child health topics. She has been a leader in the field, serving as an advisor and advocate for mothers and children for 3 decades. Kay is a member of the Department of Health and Human Services Advisory Committee on Infant Mortality. She serves as the committee's chair. And since she was appointed chair, she's led the committee in developing recommendations to reduce infant mortality. Also at the federal level, she served as senior policy advisor to the associate administrator of the Maternal and Child Health Bureau within the Health Resources and Services Administration, HRSA, where she was involved in launching the Collaborative Improvement and Innovation Network to reduce infant mortality. Kay has also served on the National Preconception Health and Healthcare Initiative at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the National Newborn Screening Task Force, and the National Committee on Perinatal Health. During her time with the CDC initiative, she co-authored national recommendations to improve preconception health and healthcare in the United States and guided the development of 3 national summits. She has previously served as Director of Policy and Government Affairs at the March of Dimes and as Director of the Health Division at the Children's Defense Fund. So she's held numerous leadership positions. She's also been noticed for many other awards, and I'll mention that among her many honors, Kay received the Maternal and Child Health Bureau Director's Award for Leadership in MCH in 2014. So I will close this introduction by reading a quote from Deborah Klein Walker, a past winner of this award and a past APHA president, as part of the nomination of Kay for this award. "I really appreciate her strategic and systemic thinking about any issues she tackles. She's able to see the big picture and present the solutions to the issues in user-friendly components for action that policymakers and consumers can understand. This alone distinguishes her from the maternal and child health leaders and policy analysts and is one of the keys to her success." So with that, I'd like to congratulate Kay on receiving this award.